Blog Talk Radio.
The Abolitionist Hour. I'm your host, Carl G. Call in at 646-716-8652. And don't forget to push 1. Broadcasting from the southern plains of the greater Midwest in Kansas City, overlooking the beautiful Kaw River Valley in lovely Wyandotte County, Kansas, and occupied Osage Indian Territory. So greetings, ex-prisoners, partisans, communards, brigadiers, and lumpen proletariat. This is the Prison Abolitionist Hour podcast, celebrating 370 years of anti-capitalist thought through reasoning and rebellion.
Greetings, October 23rd, 2021. We're under a hunter's moon, 162 years after John Brown's raid on Harper's Ferry. Mike, are you with me? Okay, I don't hear Mike,
yeah.
But I hope I'm on.
I'm there. I'm a little slow.
I got you. So did you get all your farm work done before the cold?
No, absolutely. The idiots across the highway are still combining soybeans right up till it came down to rain, and our house is like in the wind path, so we get all the husk and dust from the harvesters. So we're surrounded by corn and soybeans. It's the story of Kansas, it sounds like nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
Corn.
Mm-hmm. Because traditionally you think of wheat fields in Kansas. Is that right?
Yeah. Not anymore.
Is it Russian Red? Was that the variety that came out of Kansas? Russian Red.
Well, it was. Well, that would be western Kansas, southwestern Kansas, central Kansas. Yeah.
I always think of the – oh, the Mennonites?
Mennonites brought that over. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, I always think of the Pete Seeger song, Sodbuster. Did you ever hear that one?
I don't know that one. No, I don't. I haven't heard that one.
Well – of course, this is our IWOC. Oh, okay. Go ahead.
Your host, or I think your guest may have called in here. Let me check into the green room and see. Yeah. Hold on just a minute.
Okay. Well, let me tell you about Gaddafi.
Gaddafi's with
Casey Tenants. He's with the Casey Homeless Union that works with IWOC and in the IWW. And so they're going on the first year of organizing, and we're going into the season where we're getting ready for winter camping. And so Gaddafi's going to give us a little insight of what's going on the ground here in Kansas City. He was one of our first IWOC members inside back in 2014. And so we could talk a little bit about reentry and what it's like for prisoners that finally make it out. And so there's a lot of things we can talk about with Gaddafi. So I'm glad to have him on. And yeah, if he's still there, hello Gaddafi. And it's also James Shelby, if you're looking for him on Facebook.
Gaddafi. I'm here.
Hey,
yes, sir.
Good evening. Good
I'm
evening.
All right. How you doing?
Not bad. Not bad. I got a little bit of work done outside and then got back in here in time and got the paint off of me. And so we got an IWOC conference call in the next room. And so I got the door shut there, but 7 o'clock is a good time Saturday night for a podcast, so we can catch people before they go out or have other things planned. And so I was trying to get you on last week, and we ran over. And so I there's a lot of things to talk about because you were with IWOC inside, and then when you got out, Casey Tennant started up, and so you were there to make sure that housing for returning prisoners. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you good.
Oh, okay. Well, actually, when I first heard about IWOC in prison, and I think I was one of the first two or three people, to actually, join or come in contact. I know I was one of the first few. And, from there, I seen the intent. First I think Brianna was kind of naive, in what she was doing. But because she was gung-ho, I wanted to help. And inside I decided to help. And I was trying to tell her how to revamp it to make it last like it's doing, to have a lasting effect, to make it bigger, better, stronger, and more efficient. Because truthfully speaking, prisoners will wreck something unwittingly because people not used to people caring or people coming and being their form. And so everybody thinks everybody is just some type of trick or they got an angle of people getting paid off of extorting and exploiting us. And people often do. And then they abandon us. But, in this case, it was a good gamble, and Brianna and you proved to be totally worthy. And IWOC is the number one thing in my book. I'm with other organizations, but before I was with other organizations, I was all in with IWOC while I was in prison. And, it was multiple situations where they just got my back, because, did nobody else have it? And I'm one of the type of prisoners that, the administration loved to antagonize, lock up. And when people don't have outside support, they try to have their way with them. And I'm one of the type of dudes just ain't going for it. And so they dogged me out, and IWOC rescued me quite a few times just being there. That outside support is sometimes that's all we need is somebody out here saying that we looking, or the whole world is watching, And I appreciate that. And when I got out, I got out August the 9th, 2019, after doing 22 years. And the next day, August the 10th, I was homeless, And that's how I started my homeless career, the day after getting out of prison. And it's hard for family and friends to deal with us when we've been gone decades, and we got our funny, little ways or whatever, and especially when you deal with people like family, and they mean you well, but they want to control you, and they don't know that that's the worst thing that you could do is try to control somebody that people been controlling for decades, and now you want to come out and act like they still in prison, like you the new warden. And that was my case where, me and my sister didn't see eye to eye the first day, and I felt like I'd be better off in the street and because I couldn't see needing another warden that soon after being free. And that same week, IWOC came to the rescue, and they rescued me, and they made sure I had a place available to live. You know, whether I lived or not, and it took me a long time because they thought something was wrong with me for me to warm up to actually live in there because I just went through a thing with my own sister, you know, and for somebody else to offer me some space. And so the space they offered me, I was on Brianna and Carl and their mother and their grandma. Oh, but anyway, but the space they offered me, I used as storage space at first and not didn't live there, and but it saved me. You know, it gave me the room to make decisions. I wasn't in a desperate situation. I had somewhere to literally lay my head in case of emergency. And there were often times that I did. You know, I had a place I could go shower. You know, even though I didn't consider myself living there, you know, I considered it storage space. You know, and I was actually living on the street and, you know, living out of my car or whatever. And I only used it as storage space because I couldn't see me being in another compromising situation where I didn't see eye to eye with whoever space this was, and they telling me I had to go. You know, that's the worst feeling in the world, you know, is to, you know, to be demoted or put out, you know, when you ain't ready for it. So I decided to go through it once. And but that did not prove to be the case. You know, I've been my hero since the first day I walked out. And not only that, I walked the one introduced me to this little ragtag group, KC Tenants. And KC Tenants had just really got started, but they wasn't really doing nothing. It was like in talk. I think they had did one demonstration, and it was a little ragtag group of misfits. And Brianna said that she think I could help them. And obviously, I did too. So I joined KC Tenants. And KC Tennant said I helped them, you know, with my aggressive style, pass the KC Tennant Bill of Rights, which is like a big fucking deal. Can you curse on this place? Which really is a big deal everywhere, you know, tenants having a tenants Bill of Rights. And, you know, Outwalk took me to a couple of other groups, you know, Green Party, KC Tennant, Real Justice Next, and everywhere that they took me to get involved with. Those are the groups I'm still involved with and still doing things. So, you know, Outwalk is my root. You know, and everything that I'm doing is based on them being there for me, giving me the comfort zone, you know, to move and to groom and to find my, get my feet up under me and to do what I do. Even starting this KC Homeless Union, you know, because, you know, nobody thought that people could actually form a union out of homeless people. You know what I'm saying? And it's radical, but it's working. You know, and so almost everything that I do, got my nappy roots back to Outwalk.
Yeah, and how many cardholders do you have in the KC Homeless Union now? Because
I need another 500 or more. I was supposed to ask for more, and I keep forgetting because sometimes I be thinking it's a burden because each time I done got like 500 at a time, and we sell them out, and people actually, you know, people lose a lot of data because they dog us out, they make us move, they, you know, sweep us, and they like doing stuff like that. But when people get their homeless union card, man, people use that. They wear that like a badge of honor. They whip that out on the police, any other agency, and the KC Homeless Union, which, you know, it got Outwalk on the back, a couple of, you know, people that hug your hood, people that we associate with, you know, but people look at that like a badge of honor and use that as the number one source of these my people, you know, I'm in the union. You know, and I like that, you know, homeless people found a voice. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, they're using it. They're leaning into their power. You know, they done came out of the closet. And now they understand, you know, my thing was to make the homeless people visible. To be seen is to be heard. And so everybody in Kansas City done came from under the bridges, out of the closet, and they out in the open. It's the first time anybody ever seen this many homeless people in Kansas City just living out in open camps like they are. You know what I'm saying? They would find a few people here. And now you find in large communities, and that's why the KC Homeless Union keeps sponsoring a homeless camp, because I want people to see where there's, you know, 50, 100 tents, you know, where it's constantly growing, long as these so-called authorities don't bother us, because the homeless union camp just continues to grow like a fungus, you know, and there's homeless people everywhere, you know, and we need to be heard, and to be seen is to be heard.
And we're starting to see people come in. They estimate 2,000 people camping for the first time in the winter in Kansas City.
Right. And go on.
No. So what you all are doing now, which you've been preparing all summer for the cold weather.
Right. Well, I mean, I'm stepping out of my car. I'm kind of secluded. I'm stepping out of my car to talk, and so in case my sound changed. But anyway, you know, that's an interesting subject, because it's estimated that there are over 2,000 homeless people in the city. I think it's more, because there are different categories. So there are homeless people that with addresses, you know, and there are homeless people that don't have an address, but they're not on the street, and then it's the ones that's on the street. The people with addresses is people like every prisoner come out of prison. They can't get out of prison unless they got somebody to say they can live with them, like I did, you know. But oftentimes people come out of prison and immediately become homeless, like I did. And so just because you have an address, you know, or people say you can live with them, and then there's a lot of people on their mother's couch or their cousin's basement and all that, but they still homeless. It's just that they got shelter for now, but oftentimes something happens and they don't even know they're homeless. They think they're not. But they're not paying rent, they're not paying bills, and even if they is paying out, you know, from day to day, they're not stable, and they really is homeless, and they shift around. And so those are people with addresses. Then you got people that got jobs and living out of hotels and living out of their cars. They are no less homeless than the people actually on the street. They just a little better off. And then you got the people on the street that just literally homeless, and some of those have been in and out for years and don't know how to act. And then, like I said, every prisoner that comes out of prison is literally homeless. You know what I'm saying? And oftentimes, most of the people you see on the corners are ex-felons. And, you know, it's just a way of life. Even before people get out of prison, people are being extorted, exploited, and molested, because the parole board will not let a person out of prison unless they got somebody to say they have, you know, that they can live someplace. And if you don't have that and you can't find, there's not enough transitional houses to cover the prisoners coming out. It's just not. And so bed space, it's always somebody waiting on any bed space come open. And like I said, if you don't have a place to live, they don't let you out. They keep you over. So you got a lot of people in prison getting other prisoners to say that they cousin or girlfriend or somebody else could live with them, when in actuality they just doing that or just saying that, you know. And when they come out, they automatically owe them and got to take care and look out in order to maintain their status. The number one reason most people go back to prison out here is because of loans, and they call that not reporting that they moved to a new address, you know, to their parole officer. And so that's one of the most important things, is that they want to know where we are at all times. And to maintain a stable address is everything, you know, and it determines how much you see your parole officer, whether you see him once a week or once a month or once every 3 months, you know, is how well you're able to maintain your living status and quarters. And so people getting out of prison, and they paying people in prison and doing criminal activity out here just for they people to say that they live with them, even though they don't live with them at all. And it's a vicious cycle that people are being forced into this type of servitude. And I'm pretty sure the parole board and the powers that be know better, but they just turn and look the other way. You know, and so it's, and then, like I said, it's a lot more homeless people than admit that they're homeless. Some don't even know that they're homeless, but they are. It's just because they're sleeping on their sister's couch or in their cousin's basement don't make them no less homeless, and they is subject to be gone any moment, and they do. And that's why a lot of them end up back on the street, because they thought they wasn't homeless until they realized that they wasn't paying rent, they had no legal nothing when somebody say, hey, you need to go. You know, if you, and so it's a lot of that going on. And like I said, especially with ex-prisons, there's no or not enough transitional housing. People don't care about us, you know, or they don't show it, or they don't know it and don't know how to deal with this, because it's a complex situation that ain't nobody paying attention to, you know?
Yeah, and last winter, and of course, we should say something about City Union Mission, how dangerous the mission is to stay at.
Many of the people that we deal with come from City Union Mission and Restart and places like that. Being in those places is like being on the prison yard, and being on the prison yard is dangerous as hell. Trust me, you know. And people are actually, the city can't wrap his mind around the mayor, the city manager, the politicians, the city council. They can't wrap their mind around the fact that people are actually leaving these shelters to come live with the KC Homeless Union's camp, you know. And so they fault me, saying I'm stealing their customers, you know, because people are leaving out of shelters where, you know, they're supposed to be providing for them, where the city paid them X amount of money every year to maintain, and people are leaving those places to come out and live outside with us. And it's a reason for that. Like I said, being in there is just like being on the prison yard, and not just with the people who are there. It starts with the staff. They treat people like cattle, and they talk so bad to them. And like I said, they in the racketeering and everything else simply try to have their way with people and talk down to them and belittle them and whatever else. And people just not into being subjugated. I mean, hold up. People not into being subjected to that type of abuse on purpose when they can just walk away. And then shelters is in the business of being in business based on us being homeless. I don't support shelters. You know, that's their whole business is us being homeless. If we don't be homeless, they don't exist. And I wish they didn't exist. You know, and I don't want to support a shelter that's in the business of being in business based on us being homeless to provide a service, you know. And the city is paying the shelters, you know, to provide this. So technically, they're paying people to keep us homeless, to keep us down. The same money that they're using and spending $15 million on homeless shelters and other things to provide services, if they spent that on provide some of the 10,000 homes at Land Bank, then there would actually be no homeless people in Kansas City at all. The homeless problem is man-made, and they're maintaining it. It's a multi-million dollar industry. They're passing out over $15 million annually every year to shelters. And the shelters are simply in the business of staying in business based on us being homeless. And if the city is paying out $15 million, the private sector is donating 5 to 10 times that amount. And so with a $75 to $100 million budget annually each year, there would not be a homeless problem in Kansas City. But the only reason it is because it's a multi-million dollar industry that's just playing a shell game and using us as a prop to steal money. We don't need no services provided. The same money that they're taking to provide the services, they can provide us a home and we wouldn't be homeless. That's a sham. I know I'm talking a lot, but...
It's interesting. It's because, like, the land bank has, like, 10,000 empty houses in the city.
And rather than to take $15 million and buy some of those out, and I went to land bank and to the auction they had in August, and they were selling nice homes for back taxes of, like, $500, $800. And if you can buy a home for $800 or less, and that was one of the expensive ones, or less, and then these, some, most of these was in shape where people could move in right now, could probably pass inspection, or, you know, took little or nothing to get it up to par. And if you could take $15 million, that's enough to buy every single homeless person a home in Kansas City, and nobody has to be homeless. This is a manufactured problem. They're intentionally doing other stuff with money to provide a service when we don't need a service. The only thing them providing a service means is that the purpose of them providing a service get paid. And the homeless people is used as a prop for them to get paid, and the homeless people remain homeless. You know, they could take that same money and buy the homes from the city, you know, from Jackson County. They could have bought all the homes Jackson County sold, and there would be no homeless problem in Kansas City. This is manufactured, and it's sad. And not only that, the federal government gave this city, they have right now $97.5 million to deal with, you know, helping people stay in their homes, homeless people get homes and get someplace. They got all of this money, and they sitting set it aside. Yeah, they say they got it sitting in our beds, something like that, the way they just sit on it. You know what I'm saying? And it's actually our money. We could actually have places to live. And this is not the city's money. It's the federal government money, COVID money that they set aside and earmarked for this specific thing. Only our city council decided they're going to sit on that. And now while they're sitting on it, then they bring in these corporations, these big pharmaceutical companies and drug stores and stuff, and then they give them a tax break to just exist and give them a 25-30 year tax break where they don't have to pay nothing, and it costs the city to do that because that's funds that the city could be getting. And so the city is in debt because of that. And then the city turn around and figure out how to steal some of the funds that's set aside to look out and take care of the homeless problem and to pay its own bills from the giving away money to the rich, stealing from the poor and giving it to the rich. And it's a shell game, and they constantly doing it, and they is pissed off at me because of the way I talk, because I pointed out, now I do have statistics, and I got paperwork, and I'm dealing with people, you know, concerning trying to rectify this about follow the money. And every time, and the more I do this, the more people get pissed off at me saying that I'm stepping on people's toes. And I'm saying if I'm stepping on people's toes, then their damn toes must be pointed in the wrong direction.
Okay, that's right. I'm saying, no, it's you know, it's a little over a year that you started the homeless union, and that was about the time of the Casey Tenet's list of demands.
Right.
And so recently, Casey Tenet walked out of a meeting with the mayor about 10
right.
days ago. And
right.
So they're standing firm, and they're, you know, on their demands, and they're pointing out the hypocrisy. And so Casey Tenet is very much in line with the Casey Homeless Union, and you provide a lot of services around the city as a union.
Actually, we have the same purpose. You know, Casey Tenet and the Casey Homeless Union, our goal is to get people off the street or to keep people in their homes, you know, with safe, affordable, accessible homes. You know, our goal is one and the same in many instances. I mean, I am a leader and organizer with Casey Tenet. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, they've been having our back, you know, the two groups that has had our back, you know, solid 100% has been IWOC and Casey Tenet. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, like their goal and our goal is one and the same, to, you know, stay accessible, affordable, and the mayor is lying. The mayor is playing shell games, making broken promises. Like when me and the mayor so-called negotiated, you know, in April or whatever, it was then we did it in public, you know, because I didn't want to make no backroom deals and nobody, because literally I was offered a home and offered money to fix it up. And I'm talking about a nice home. And they was telling me to worry about me and don't worry about the people. And I refused that, you know, because the age-old trick, they bow off the leadership and then they got to keep their mouth closed. But anyway, we negotiated in public. You know, that's why I wanted everything that we did said and done in public. And we made a deal with the whole city, with the mayor, and they promised us. You know, they put us in hotels for 90 days. They promised that at the end of 90 days, we would be placed in tiny homes or hotels would be converted into rooms or apartments and all this stuff. But they guaranteed us that we would not be end up back on the street. And now that we're back on the street, the mayor has nothing to say. He's not even in the picture. None of our government officials is saying or doing anything notably. Yes, I take that back. Melissa Robinson and, you know, Rainer Park Shaw, there is a few of them that is saying something and trying to do something. But for the most part, our city council has, you know, decided that they didn't want us, you know, like Catherine Shields said, not in our backyard. They don't want us in their district. But when the smoke cleared, the homeless people is back on the street. They spent millions of dollars on hotels, and the homeless community did not benefit from that. The only people that benefited was the hotels. The homeless people don't benefit from the shelters being there. The shelters benefit, and they take care of each other. They have a place to live. They take care of their family, and they do it based on saying they're providing a service for us. And everybody that provides a service for us, they have a home, and they get money, and they get paid. And the people that they provide the service for remain poor, broke, and helpless, and in servitude of them provide this service. It's almost like slavery, in a sense. You know, they keep us down. They only get our name and our number, Social Security number, and stuff, so they can say they provided a service, so they can account for X amount of money or whatever they're stealing in our name, and we don't know no better. And therefore, they've been able to do this for years, decades. And for the first time, this is the first time that the homeless has ever, ever, ever had a voice. This union thing is a voice. And it's the first time that anybody, you know, homeless person have ever been able to stand up to and say, this is not what we want, you know. And it is our belief that those who are closer to the problem is closer to the solution. And that would mean us. You know, and they're not dealing with us. Until they deal directly with us, you know, then they just playing games, you know, and stealing from the people.
Now, last winter, when it got cold, they started a program where they had people at Bartle Hall.
They
and,
hold on. Let me back that up. Last year, a person went to a homeless camp and found out where it was, and then the same person went and I don't pull punches, Antioch, Washington. He went to a homeless camp, seen who they was, and then reported them. Went and told the park rangers to come clean up the camp and all that, and they swept the camp. And they cleaned it up, all right? They cleaned everybody out, took everybody's stuff, and threw it away. And then once the park rangers did that, per his request, then he went and protested at the mayor's house, you know, and did his little thing, and then that spooked the mayor. And so the mayor got the city manager to open, they negotiated and got Border Hall open, you know, as a warming center. And it was a total disaster. They stole, they robbed, stole, pillaged, and it was worse than being on the prison yard. People was getting their shoes took every, it's one little fellow he would come down to our camp at 6, because at the time we was occupying City Hall. He would come down to City Hall every day. He needed a new pair of shoes because Adidas took his shoes up in there, and he'd be walking around in the snow and ice, and that's the coldest winter I ever remember. And his man was out there in the cold every day without his coat or some shoes. And Border Hall was a total disaster. It was big. I mean, it was done. A person plotted his way, reported the camp, then protested the camp, and then the mayor and the city council gave in and gave them money, and that same person is still involved or trying to be involved with homeless people and running around taking people's personal information, and I don't know what he's doing with it, but, you know, I tell people in the homeless union, don't give him your information. He's not even hired by anyone, you know, and don't have a job. And what they did last year is a Travis Sham mockery, and they all agree that they're not going to do that again this year. It was embarrassing.
And then when there's several hundred hotel rooms available after Bartle Hall, Oh, go ahead.
No, you first. I didn't get the whole
question.
I'll just be ready to talk.
No, you know, because there was this situation where Independence, they were saying they didn't know that homeless were getting rooms in Independence, and they were forced to move again.
Yeah, I mean, what they did was is they was they put people in, they was finding hotel rooms anywhere to put on a show. Once we occupied City Hall, there was no way to get rid of us, and it became embarrassing. City Hall became the biggest homeless camp that had been publicly seen in Kansas City up until that point. And people, the whole world was watching, you know, that homeless people was literally occupying City Hall. You know, and it was radical. Some had never been done, and nobody expected that homeless people would come together on common terms and unionize and then make a, you know, do a political statement like that. To be seen is to be heard, and they made a hell of a statement. And so, you know, based on that, because based on that scenario, it's a lot happened. They spent $2-3 million. We didn't ask for hotels. Our list of demands in negotiating with the mayor, we wanted safe, affordable housing. You know, that's what we wanted. We wanted jobs. We didn't want handouts. I asked the city to fight X amount of jobs, you know, that the city have to pass out for homeless people. We, you know, all we were looking for is equality and equity. Just give us a chance. You know, that's all we look for. We're some of the hardest working people in the city. But anyway, we want demanded jobs, housing, and water. During a pandemic, there's no running water anywhere. There are no water fountains in public. And all public places, bathrooms, gas stations, can close their doors to wash up and to use the toilet. And during a pandemic, there's no running water for homeless people to use to sanitize. And so we demanded water. You know, and the city run the water company. And I'm like, that is not too much to ask for during a pandemic. And it's like during the Super Bowl, the mayor bragged about putting out over 70,000 porta potties for their parade. During a pandemic, where people dying left and right, there are no porta potties, and the homeless people are being forced to use the facilities outside like animals. I mean, that within itself is a Travis Sham mockery. But and the next demand, you know, housing, job, water, was our next demand was a seat at the table, meaning we wanted to be a part of the decision-making process, not just we're going to call you in the room and you can sit down and look, you know, We're saying that we are the homeless. And any time that there's a decision being made by people that's, you know, concerning us, we want to be in the room. That's why we formed the union. People was creating shelters and doing all kind of stuff and getting grant money from the city, and the city was forming for doing stuff, and they wasn't even talking to the homeless. They don't even know us. They just giving people money that's saying they're doing stuff for us, and it was stuff that we didn't even want. They didn't even assess us, didn't even know what we want. And so we were saying, based on that, is that we wanted a seat at the table to have a say-so in what money gets spent concerning us instead of other people spending money and saying they're doing it on our behalf and when they actually doing it on their own behalf. And so those are the four things we asked for. And as soon as we made this so-called deal, they announced that they wanted to extend this hotel program that they had that people was not utilizing it, saying because it was too strict and had something to do, jump through too many hoops. And the people that were so-called running it was the shelters. And it was a disaster. But they wanted to extend that program for 90 days and give us at least 500 beds to put people in. And, you know, of course, we didn't ask for that, but who would turn down? I couldn't, on behalf of people out here literally weathered the coldest winter in the history of history in Kansas City. And now they could get a chance to kind of relax and be in a hotel or something for 90 days. And then they promised at the end of the 90 days they would put up tiny houses and that the people that goes into this so-called program would not end up back on the street under no circumstances at all. And I was adamant about that. And the negotiation and stuff was done in public. And so they wanted to put us in hotels. But that was a payoff to get us off of City Hall because we was there and we was claiming we had squatters, right, for being there. And so they spent all this money putting us in hotels just to move us off City Hall and get this bad look off of them because the whole world was watching, you know, at the time. And when they put us in places, there was places like an Independence who was saying that, what's that saying they be saying, Newbie, not in my backyard, you know, and that's what Independence did. They were like, we do not want homeless people in our backyard. And so the hotel people put us out. They didn't know we was homeless. People just rented hotel rooms, a lot of them. And then when they found out it was the homeless population, they reneged on that and wanted all of us out. And that's how we often get treated. You know what I'm saying? We get kicked to the curb, pushed down, and held down. We only good enough to provide a service too, but not to live regular like normal people. And so that being the case, you know, there was several hotels and incidents that came up where we got mistreated and abused, you know, in some cases. And so that ain't nothing new. You know, it happens often.
Yeah, and it was, yeah, so people were, it was basically a sweep. Is what was
right.
Happening because it was still freezing weather, and
yes,
you know, and because it's, you know, the winter just dragged on, and
when people start dying, I mean, we knew people was gonna die. The mayor knew this before it happened, and he waited, or the city waited till people start dying before they acted. And then they only acted because the public showed public interest after we was down at City Hall, you know, because they hadn't seen nothing like this many people, homeless people coming out of the closet and making this political statement and willing to freeze their assholes, you know, to make this statement. And it's a lot of people got frostbite and all kind of stuff, but they was willing to make the sacrifice, you know, for the overall good of the homeless community. And, it's a lot of people sacrifice, and they didn't do nothing. This whole negotiation thing that they did and did in public and did to feel good, as I think the mayor is going to try to run for a higher office statewide. So he wanted to get his name out there broader than just in Kansas City, because if you just say who's the mayor of St. Joe or who's the mayor of Joplin or who the mayor of St. Louis, people don't know right off the flip, but they probably know his name from this study pool dealing with the homeless and the negotiation. He wanted to do that because he got higher aspirations, but he don't know the homeless intend to vote, and we'll be there to see his ass, you know, at the end of the rainbow. He's not going to do us like this and then walk away, you know, and live happily ever after. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, indeed. Indeed. So it's now we're heading back into winter and the holiday season.
They haven't fulfilled not one single thing that they said they was going to do. Going in the hotels was not a part of the deal. That's something they wanted to do to get rid of us from City Hall. And now they got a fence around City Hall, so we can't go back. You know, matter of fact, when they put the fence up, I still got a case. I went down there, me and one of my comrades, Callie, but anyway, me and her ended up going to jail for trying to take the fence down. And and since then, I don't think we met our court dates because we don't have no attorney. And so we just wasn't going without no attorney. And so we skipped our court dates all day. We don't even know how we stand. You know, but, yeah, it's a few people. It's a few of us will stand up and ready to fight for what we believe in, because we don't believe we should. We have a right to self-determination. We consider ourselves, and we're looking for other like-minded people to support us. We are a life-affirming community. What some people study, you know, or trying to figure out how to create this life-affirming, because we already doing it. If they just look at what we're doing, it's already in action. We are an autonomous neighborhood. Our camp, that's why the police keep coming in, the mayor and the government officials is actually having issues, because we're not dependent on them. We realize that the cavalry isn't coming. The government cavalry isn't coming. We are all we got, you know, and we are the people we've been waiting on, not somebody outside of us. Those who are closer to the problem is closer to the solution. We are the solution to ourselves. And so we are gradually getting off our ass and realizing that we've been waiting on us, not them. You know what I'm saying? We the ones that's closer to the problem, and it's going to take us to solve it. And they realizing that we're not calling the police. We don't need the government in our business. And we are actually the closest thing that you're going to see to abolitionists. I mean, we actually live
here.
Some people talk about it. Some people say it, but we actually living this life.
Hang on. All right, hang on a second.
Carl,
Mike? Yeah.
Yeah. I got a question. Can you hear me, Carl?
I can hear you.
Can you hear me, Gaddafi?
Yes, I can. I can hear you.
Okay. Now, you be talking about heart. That's good. I like that. You talk about the homeless voting and kicking Mayor Lucas's ass out of office. That's okay, too. But, hey, now listen. Maybe you might have some people down in the county, in Jackson County. I mean, Jackson County, I think that ain't they moving the city jail? They moved it's 40 years old, according to Kansas City newspaper. 40 years old. They're for $260 million. They're building a jail down in the county. $260 million jail, and there's a trailer park called Heart Village, and they paid $700 million for 100 acres around Heart Village, and Heart Village is a trailer park, and they promised these people they'd get them a place to move to, another place, and they haven't done it yet. And it's 108 households in Heart Village, the trailer park, and they bought all the land around it. They're going to build this big jail down there, and it's a Yeah, I mean it's I mean that sounds like you got some more union cards to hand out down at Hart Village. Because I'm telling you, man, it sounds like these people are going to be homeless. No. They're going to take the trailers and take them away and build a new jail. That's all I got to say. Thank you.
No, and I'm glad you did say that. And it's not just Hart Village. There are people everywhere that the city is going to run over. And there are going to be more homeless people. People are not as secure as they think. And, like, even dealing with KC Tennis, every week, every month, more people get evicted. And in the case of eviction court, 98% of all evictions get sided with the so-called landlords. And I'm saying it's going to get worse before it gets better. And I mean, people need to pay attention because they can be next. And if they not next, then they family or they friends. This is a real issue. Every minute out here is an act of terror. And unless we start coming together on common terms and joining what's right and forbidding what's wrong, then they going to run over us, the government. You know what I'm saying? And this it's like it don't have to be this way. You know, there are too many of us, and we are stronger together. We just not coming together to support one another. You know, and at some point, power is not given. You got to take it. Who's going to give up some power? And right now the government have power, and they're using it to run roughshod over just regular homeless people. Their threats of we already know today that they say that they're going to sweep us on the 29th. If it's illegal for us to be where we are down on 10th and Harrison today, I mean, 29th, why ain't they doing it today? And every time I look up, they're threatening us with being swept, pushed to the curb. You know what I'm just saying? And that's all we living under, a constant threat of we got to go, we got to pick up, we got to move on. And they do run some people off. But one of the things that's more scary than anything is that we have a community. And we're not just a ragtag little group. It's not perfect. And we got our problems. But we're not just a bunch of individuals. They wouldn't mind a bunch of individuals. They welcome a bunch of individuals passing through or going to one Faith Hope or somewhere getting a soup tray, but it's just a lot of them migrated there for the same reason, but they're not together. The homeless union camp, we together. And we are a community. And they fear that. You know, that's one of the things that they fear, that people creating autonomous neighborhoods like us and other homeless people all over the city, and now we done start branching out trying to, I got Lulu and a couple other people that I'm working with to reaching out and helping other homeless camps get more organized and to establish a treaty with them. And so what we're going to do is create our own autonomous neighborhood or community and then establish a treaty, thereby creating our own federation. I don't know if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
But that's what it's going to come to. We don't need the police. We're going to depend on each other, and that's what's scary to them. We're kicking the government out of our life. We're not depending on us. Like I said, the cavalry isn't coming. And so we're not depending on them and stuff, and that's why they keep coming at us, because we're not coming at them with our hand out. You know, we going up. I went and got some LLC license, you know, I'm bonded, and all I'm hiring is homeless people. If somebody hire me, I'm hiring homeless people, and I've been going out getting them little jobs here. Ain't nothing major yet, but we're not looking for the city, you know, to give us jobs no more. They failed that. And so now we're going to do it ourselves. You know, and so if there's anything that people can use people for, homeless people can do it. You know, we got skilled people in effort. We can do air conditioning, plumbing, you know, auto mechanic, you name it, construction. I'm saying if you name it, we got some actual engineers. We got people that specialize in everything down in these camps, you know. And, you know, if you hire us, you'll probably get some of the best work you ever got done. And, like I said, we're not waiting on the city to do it. We intend to do it for ourselves. And, yes, we do want to get with the other people that the city is dogging out, and we may be able to help them, you know, or join forces and try to, you know, I don't have no problem with helping other communities not face this here, because every act, I mean, every day out here is an act of terror. And on which this whole nobody, yeah, I do want to establish connections, allies and stuff with everybody that's similarly situated. Like I said, abolitionists, life-affirming groups, any, you know, anybody, we actually doing stuff that other people talk about doing. We're living the life, you know what I'm saying? And we figuring out how, because it's going to come to this, to where more people branch off and disassociate with the government, you know what I'm saying, and move out on their own. And we're already learning how to survive like that, you know. And people are going to need our skill sets in a minute, you know.
Yes. Yes. Okay, so we're coming up to about 5 minutes left of the show. And, the hour's almost flown by. Yeah, go ahead.
No, you go. I was just... I'm with you. Go. What you got
well,
to say?
No, it's, yeah. It's interesting how you know you're making alliances with other camps, because people don't realize exactly, you know, the structure of homelessness. Like you'll have the vets that'll live down by the river and dig out caves and you know and keep to themselves and. You have, you know, people coming
we,
in from the rural areas.
Right, and we often start seeking out our people and connecting the dots and making sure we got supplies and, you know, different stuff. We are not alone, and we're not going to let nobody be alone. Anybody that want to associate with us, we want to associate with them. As far as I'm concerned, everybody who's homeless is part of the union unless you expressly state otherwise. Otherwise, other than that, we got your back. You know, we don't have no resources, you know, but, you know, I'm just saying we working, you know, and like I said, we don't intend to let nobody else die. And if we can get somebody back that's in trouble, we can do, like I said, I have a mobile group, and we could help people do anything that need to be helped. If somebody want to donate, they can, but we don't run around begging. If somebody got some jobs they want to pay people to do, I got people that could do the work. Now, we do have a Cash App. It's like, it's a Cash App account. It's like $HUGYOHOODINC, Hug Your Hood, Inc. And I'm just saying, a person could donate to the cause, and I encourage other communities like abolitionists, life-affirming groups, you know, get with us. We living the lifestyle. You know, we are affirming that this can be done. And what the way we living and functioning, this is how you defund the government. And this is how you defund the police. You know what I'm saying? We actually living it. We ain't just talking it, you know, or studying on how it can be done. We living the lifestyle.
Thank you, Gaddafi.
Yes, sir.
KC Tenants. KC Homeless Union. Gaddafi James Shelby. We'll have you back soon. And I
walk. I appreciate you letting me on.
Had a job at 29.
Thank you.
When everything was going fine, knew the pace was pretty fast, but thought that it would always last. When organizers came to town, I'd always sneer, turn them down. I thought the boss was my best friend. He'd stick by me to the end. Ta-ra-ra. Boom, DA, ain't got a word to say. He chiseled down my pay, then took my job away. Boom went the boom one day, it made a noise that way. I wish I had been wise, next time I'll organize. I had a little bank account, not very much, a small amount, which to the savings bank I took. All they gave me was a book. I pinched on food, scraped on rent, hardly ever spent a cent. My little savings grew and grew, I thought I'd be a big shot too. Ta-ra-ra-boom-dee-ay. It made a noise that way. There went my hard earned pay, save for a rainy day. Oh, what a dirty trick. This soup line makes me sick. Where can that banker be? He's eating soup with me. And finally it came to pass. All I had to eat was grass. The wolf don't bother anymore. He starved to death right by my door. With soup and gas and club and gun, they tried to make the system run. They said, dear friends, now don't get sore. We'll make it like it was before. Tararaboom-dee-ay, it busted up one day. Those guys that stole my pay went flying every way. All that I've got to say, I hope they've gone to stay. Each dog must have his day. Tararaboom-dee-ay.